the end, but anyway, I'll make up that for it. But this is a paper, a short review that we wrote for CMP. It is like a Physics Today type thing, a little bit more advanced. So I think it's useful. It summarizes things I was discussing yesterday. So if you want, you can take a look on the web. So I'm going to make a brief summary of what we discussed last time, yesterday. So basically, I told you what is the most important problem in turbulence. And the most important problem in turbulence is to explain the correlation functions that we define appropriately. Why do they scale with some universal scaling that is independent in some range R, which is called the inertial range, bigger than some capital scale, let's say the force scale, and bigger than the viscous scale, smaller than the scale of the force. And this actually is a set of an infinite numbers, and it's interesting because normally in statistical mechanics you have to explain certain critical exponents. Here you have to explain infinite number of them, and in fact even the basic question, which is are they all independent, or is actually there is only finite number of them that are independent, is not known. So there are all kinds of, there's a phenomenology that I'm not going to summarize, but where people try to derive this from a certain function, etc. But in fact, at the end of the day, there is nothing which is very clear. The only important number that works nicely is the case of the three-point function, which is 1. And I told you that actually you could derive it from dimensional analysis, but that's a little bit misleading because from dimensional analysis you can derive for everything, and that doesn't work. In the derivation that I was quickly showing yesterday, which I will review in another way later, you see why actually the three-point function is selected out of all the others, because that particular type of derivation shows you that only three-point function can be derived this way, and you get the number 1. So I think it's much more probably general, and you can use it for other type of hydrodynamics that I'm going to discuss. Now, certain other interesting points that we saw is that in this particular case, or all the odd cases, the symmetry T goes to minus T is broken by an anomaly. Because, as I said, if you look at the equations, the Euler equations, they do have this time reversal symmetry, while this explicitly breaks it, the three-point function. And in fact, this is true. If you look at a movie of turbulence, you should be, if you're experienced enough, you should see that when they move the movie backwards or forward or backwards, you should see the difference. Time reversal is really broken in turbulence. And this is the, you can see that explicitly in that calculation, but you can see that also in movies. Okay, any questions on that? The second most important problem in this field, which I'm going to discuss tomorrow, is related to what we call cosmic censorship. It's the issue of singularity, but I'm going to discuss it at length tomorrow. So if you wish, if this can be defined as a Nobel Prize problem, this is only a millennium problem in mathematics. But this goes like this. It's basically a question whether Navier-Stokes equation as an effective theory is a good effective theory, in the sense that when you start with velocity, initial conditions for the velocity which are within the effective theory, namely bounded and all the derivatives are bounded, will the system develop at finite time a blow up? And so basically the question is whether all kinds of gradients of the velocity after finite time will go to infinity or not. And mathematically it's a very important question, but physically it's also a very important question, because if indeed there is such a singularity, it means that the effective theory of Navier-Stokes breaks down somehow. And the question is whether it's generic, non-generic, etc. Very little is known about it. In two space dimensions, the problem is solved. There are no singularities. There are no finite time blow-ups. But the real problem is D equal to 3, and this is not known, and tomorrow I'm going to discuss it at somewhat length and related to cosmic censorship. One last comment on that is that in the incompressible case, shockwaves are not solutions. So therefore, the things that blow up like shockwaves are not part of the story, because the incompressibility condition killed them. Okay, let me go on now to discuss relativistic hydrodynamics, where this is actually a particular, what I discussed yesterday was a particular limit of it. Interestingly enough, although a lot is known about the non-relativistic case, at least numerically, experimentally, very, very little is known about the relativistic case. So it's a totally open field. There is very little knowledge, if at all, about universality classes, etc. Okay, so the subject will be relativistic hydrodynamics. Okay, so
Is at the very end, right?
Yes. I will repeat, and then you see that other one is just a particular example of that. So, relativistic hydrodynamics, basically you can think about having some, whatever, microscopic field theory, and you ask whether there is a certain approximation where you can write it as a hydrodynamic set of equations, and there is indeed such an approximation. So one defines a parameter, Km, which is called the Knudsen number. And the Knudsen number is just the ratio of the correlation length, or the mean free path, sometimes it's called, divided by a length scale, a capital length scale, on which microscopic fields change. And the condition for hydrodynamics is that this is smaller, smaller than one. So LC sometimes is also called the mean free path. Now, basically, this is a formal way of saying that you have a derivative expansion, and that's what hydrodynamics is about. There is a set of derivative expansions, and what you do is you expand the currents in this parameter. Now, hydrodynamics is basically a set of conservation laws. The assumption in hydrodynamics is that this long wavelengths, the relevant degrees of freedom are the conserved charges, and therefore, all the set of equations are conservation laws. Typically, what you have is a conservation law of energy momentum tensor. But you can also have all kinds of global symmetries or charge currents, and then you can add d mu, j mu equal to zero, can have an index A here also for many currents. So the set of equations are like that, and then you have to express them in terms of the degrees of freedom that are relevant for that. Here there are a couple of interesting questions that we'll discuss later. What happens if these currents are, for instance, anomalous? Or what happens, for instance, if these currents are spontaneously broken? So if they are anomalous, we know the answer. If they are spontaneously broken, actually it's an open problem. The hydrodynamics was not derived yet. In the ABS context, you can think about it when you get... when you have like a gauge field and gravity and a scalar, and you go to the phase where there is some condensation and it's a superfluid, the hydrodynamics of that regime is not known. Nobody really derived it. Okay, so now let me start first of all without the charge case, just team you knew, and start to develop this hydrodynamics. And the degrees of freedom or the fields in the problem are epsilon, which is the energy density. Then there is P, which is the pressure. And there is a or a D velocity vector, let's call it U mu, that satisfies, so if we do it in D dimensions, mu will be 0 up to d minus 1. And this is the ordinary thing that we have, right? It's the gamma beta I. And it's the velocity of the flow. And it is subject to some condition, which follows from this immediately, that u mu is minus 1. So these are the fields in the problem. And now what you do is you start to write the expression for T mu nu as a function of these quantities and their derivatives. So formally, you write T mu nu as a sum over L of this Knudsen number to the power L, T mu nu L. Whereby this we mean the following, L equal to zero, for instance, is the ideal hydrodynamics. So there are no derivatives. So basically no derivatives. And then L equal to one is the viscous, its first derivatives. And then there are first derivatives here. Etc. You can continue. Basically, we know the expression up to L equal to two, at least in the conformal case. Also not in the conformal case. But if you go beyond that, it's not known. I mean, people never constructed it. So L equal to three is an open problem here, if you wish. Now, how do you construct it? So let's look first of all at the ideal case, L equal to zero. So we have to write an expression which is basically Lorentz invariant, right dimension, and no derivatives. And the answer is up to an overall constant is something is basically the following thing: is epsilon u mu u nu plus p times eta mu nu plus u mu u nu. And you can see that this is the right expression if you go to the rest frame, for instance. So you go to the rest frame. So the rest frame is you basically take u mu to be 1, 0, 0. Right? And this just becomes the usual expression. T mu nu is just epsilon p. That's what it is. Yeah. Okay, so that's the end, and this you obtain just by boosting the rest frame stress energy. Now, how many equations do you have? So hydrodynamics has to be a closed set of equations, and let's count how many equations actually we have. And we have D conservation laws. On the other hand, we have more than D fields, right? We have one, another one, and D minus one like this. It's D, but we subject to this, it's D minus one. So it's actually D plus one equations. So this is not sufficient, this conservation law is not sufficient to determine them, and indeed it's true. What you actually need to supply is what is called the equation of state. So you actually need to supply an equation which tells you what is epsilon as a function of p. If you supply that, then it's a closed system. Particular example that we like because of, let's say, we like conformal field theories, is the conformal case, and in that, or conformal hydrodynamics, and in this, conformal hydrodynamics is defined by adding to this condition also the fact that the energy momentum tensor is traceless. Because of usual scaling symmetry. So you need to supply this as well. Now what this means, so if you take a look here at this equation, the trace of this being zero basically tells you that epsilon is d minus one times p. You have to take the trace respect to the eta, the Minkowskian. Okay, so that's the equation of state for conformal hydrodynamics. For instance, you could have already a non-trivial case if you take epsilon to be a general sigma times p. That's already non-conformal if sigma is different than d minus one. And indeed, actually, there is an example for that also from gravity. So gravitational dual of such a case exists. But in general, we don't have examples for everything that we want. We can do that But I'll show you later from black hole physics, you can do that in fact without knowing the full background. You can get a general equation of state. In this particular case, there is also another interesting thing, is the speed of sound. The speed of sound. So the speed of sound, Vs squared, is defined by the derivative of pressure with respect to epsilon. And in this case, it will be 1 over d minus 1. Okay, so this is the V, speed of sound squared. And let's say if you are in four dimensions, speed of sound will be 1. That's in units, of course, of C equal to 1. Yes, C, speed of light is 1. Yeah. Otherwise, I have to put it. So basically, if you look at conformal hydrodynamics in four dimensions, speed of sound is just 1 over square root of 3 speed of light. So when you consider the limit of velocities, a non-relativistic, the non-relativistic limit, you also get immediately the limit of V smaller than the speed of sound, and you get incompressible hydrodynamics. Therefore, if you start with conformal hydrodynamics, relativistic one, and you try to get a non-relativistic limit, you will always get incompressible Navier-Stokes equations that I was talking about. I'll show you it later. And therefore, incompressible Navier-Stokes equations, the real ones that describe fluids, are just a particular corner of conformal field theory hydrodynamics. So maybe we should be happy about that, that conformal hydrodynamics is not totally useless. It's the real world, it's just a particular, non-relativistic real world is a particular limit of it. If you want to get compressible non-relativistic hydrodynamics, in fact, it's an open problem. Nobody really did that from on the gravitational side, because you need to consider a non-conformal case, and we don't have that many examples. So anyway, are there questions up to now on that? Okay. So let's see. Let's first of all discuss the second viscous order, and then I'll show you a couple of interesting results coming out of that. Yes? I use the other one. Okay. Well, anyway, then. Okay. Okay. So what happens when you take L equal to 1? So that's the first viscous order. And L equal to 1, so actually it's been worked out. Again, using symmetries, etc., you write the more general things. And what you have is the following. So T mu nu at 1, at order 1, has two pieces in it. So one piece is minus 2 eta, I'll explain what is it, sigma mu nu, plus or minus actually 2 zeta d alpha u alpha times this eta mu nu plus u mu u mu. So let me make, first of all, a couple of comments. This operator here that appeared here, eta mu nu plus u mu u nu, is actually a very interesting guy because of the following fact. So if I define, let's define it, sometimes you will see it defined like this, as eta mu nu plus u mu u nu. This operator has a zero eigenvector, which is the velocity, because if you look at p mu nu, mu nu, and you use the relations I was writing before, it's zero. So it's actually degenerate. In fact, this is going to give you the metric on the horizon of the black brain. So the metric on the horizon of a black brain is a null surface, and this will be exactly the metric, up to an overall scaling by some temperature. And it appears quite often in all this game. Now, there are eta and zeta, these ones are called transport coefficients. Eta is called the shear viscosity. Zeta, it's called bulk viscosity. And these are quantities that parameterize your model, or basically your fluid. So different fluids can have different eta and different zeta. And the only, so that's the power of hydrodynamics is the, it doesn't matter what is the quantum field theory you want to consider, the field theory you want to consider. Suppose you want to consider n equal to 4, but you want to consider it at Tuft coupling 5 or Tuft coupling 100. The only difference can be, in that case, by the way, there's no zeta, we'll discuss in a second, is this transport coefficient. But the rest is the same. So the hydrodynamics is very general. So if you think about adding higher derivative terms to gravity to describe such systems, it will only affect these quantities, not the hydrodynamics itself. The equations are the same. Now, the sigma mu nu is built such that it satisfies the following conditions. So first of all, when you want to consider the viscous order, you have to pick a frame. The frame means that you remove the ambiguity of changing the fields, what you call in this case pressure and energy density, velocities, because you can reshuffle. So the frame which is used here is called the Landau frame. Yes. So in Navier's talks, you didn't need an equation of state because what was happening is that pressure. Right, but what? So what was happening there is that it's the energy density is replaced by this mass density. And the mass density there is constant. It's, so when I wrote the Navier-Stokes equation, normally I should have added also an energy density, which is the analog of this epsilon, but it's called mass density as a function of x and b. And then the Navier-Stokes equation would not look like that. They would look something like dt of rho vi plus all kinds of stuff. This is basically the F equal MA. And then I should have told you how this, they would add another degree of freedom. Is rho equal constant.
Conformal hydrodynamics in a particular domain.
So what happens is that whenever you consider velocities which are small, much, much smaller than the speed of sound, then the sounds are the compression modes of this method.
Right.
And when you're considering this limit, this is where there is called the Mach, low Mach limit.
Ah, basically Mach because
numbers. Then is
C squares and basically.
So this speed of sound, right? Speed of sound squared or whatever. Was the variation of the pressure with respect to this rho. In the particular limit of these low Mach numbers, you always get rho equal to constant. But I didn't have to have that. I could have had non-relativistic compressible hydrodynamics. That would have added to me another degree of freedom, and then I should have supplied you what is the relation between pressure and this. So there are all kinds of names for this. Barometric fluid, this fluid, they all have all kinds of names. But that was a very particular. So the comment I was making before that you get from the non-relativistic limit immediately the incompressible is because when you start with conformal case, the speed of sound and the speed of light are roughly the same. So in order to get compressible non-relativistic, you have to take velocities which are smaller than c, but let's say of the order of this. And this you can achieve, but not starting with conformal hydrodynamics, because in there, Vs and C are actually the same order. That was the problem. Okay. So now, this is called the Landau frame, and the Landau frame is basically defined by requiring that U mu, T mu nu, let's call it N, all the ones is zero. N bigger or equal to one. Okay, that's a Landau frame. You can choose, there are other frames one can choose. And in this particular frame, this expression is written, and therefore sigma mu nu is an object that also satisfies this condition. This I already told you it satisfies because this projection operator. So,
so what happens is that
there is an ambiguity at the higher order of right. I mean, it's not ambiguity in the physics. It's ambiguity in the fact that there is you can write it in many ways. It will give you an equivalent result. And then there is a choice of a frame. It basically tells you, the frame choice tells you, what do you want to be the velocity? Should it be the velocity of the energy? Should it be the velocity of the entropy? In other cases, should it be the velocity of the charges? How you define that? So this gives you different frames.
This will choose me.
So this will choose you, basically, if you look at the expression for mu nu, it will tell you that the energy density is the one that you want to consider at the flow. That's what it tells you.
But for instance, there's another very useful frame. It's called the Eckart frame, when you have charged cases, and in that case, that frame requires that it's the charge that determines what is the flow. There is no... Anyway, so sigma mu nu has the following property, that it satisfies that u mu sigma mu nu is zero. Also, sigma mu nu is symmetric, because the stress energy is symmetric. And also, sigma mu nu is traceless. So this is important, because this is the only term that remains if you require that the trace is zero, because the trace of this is non-zero. So therefore, in the conformal case, there is only shear viscosity. So zeta is zero, just because the second piece doesn't have a zero trace. Sigma mu nu, you can determine uniquely from this. It's called the shear tensor. And what you're going to get if you satisfy all these conditions is half d mu u mu plus d mu u mu plus half u mu u alpha d alpha u mu plus u mu u alpha d alpha u mu. And then you have to remove the trace, so it will be like minus 1 over d, minus 1, d alpha, u alpha, times this operator, eta mu nu, plus u mu u. So it's an easy exercise, you can check that. On the gravity side, this is a similar meaning. It's the shear tensor is the one that tells you that the horizon basically has two possibilities. One is to expand and the other is to twist and shear. This is the same quantity that does this, that on the horizon, on the black point. So it's very, very, very similar. So this is the general case. And now if you want to, from these three conditions. So you just try to write first derivative terms. Use these three conditions, you will derive this expression. That's... Okay. Now let's go back again to the conformal case. And so in the conformal case, we say that epsilon is d minus 1 times p. In fact, there is also another thermodynamical relation, which is epsilon plus p equal t times s. And just from dimensional analysis in the conformal case, the only quantity that exists is the temperature. So basically, you have epsilon goes like t to the power d. And the stress energy tensor looks, let's look at the ideal case. It's just t to the power d times eta mu nu plus d times u mu u nu. And the viscous one is before. The t mu nu one is just this minus 2 eta sigma mu nu. So far, eta is arbitrary. for particular models, like for instance gravitational model, this eta divided by this s, these are all densities, will give you the 1 over 4 pi. But in general, it's an arbitrary quantity. Okay, so this is conformal hydrodynamics, and now let's do an exercise. Actually, before I do this exercise, let me tell you something about this Reynolds number thing. So let's estimate the Reynolds number in a relativistic case, and let's take even the conformal one. So the Reynolds number So as I said, the Reynolds number is basically estimating the ratio between ideal and viscous terms. And in this case, it's basically the ratio between quantities that appear here and quantities that appear here. But we can easily estimate it. So what you're seeing here is something like t to the power d divided by now here there is an eta, but here there are also some scales which are derivatives. So it's basically something like eta times some length scale here, and then that's it. Now the entropy density goes like t to the power d minus 1. So that roughly looks like T times L divided by eta over S. So that's the estimate of the Reynolds number, where temperature is the typical temperature of the problem, L is the length scale on which things vary, and eta over S is the quantity that is very famous, people compute it. So now, so as a simple exercise, let's take a RIC, okay? And estimate the Reynolds number in RIC. So in RIC experiment, maybe later I can explain to you exactly what these guys are measuring, but the temperature that they have is about 200 MeV or something like that, around a little above the deconfinement. The length scale is the length scale of this nuclei that collide. It's about Fermi, something of that order. So one Fermi. So altogether, these guys are of order one. And eta over s is small. Nobody knows exactly, but it's like, say, 1 over 4 pi. Something like that. If you plug this number, you are going to get something of order 10 or something. Maybe 100 if you press it. Not more than that. So actually, the whole RIC experiment, which is very complicated, with what we are told is an ideal fluid, etc., actually doesn't show turbulence at all. It's just very, very simple laminar flow, just by this simple counting. Which is kind of disappointing, but that's the story there. Okay. So I don't know if at this point, do you want to understand how the RIC experiment works, or we can continue with other stuff? It's up to you. Continue, okay. So let's do the following quick exercise and see why the Navier-Stokes equations are contained in conformal hydrodynamics. Also not in conformal, but let's say conformal hydrodynamics. For that, I need to, first of all, get the equations right. So this is the quantity that is going to give you the viscous term, and this is the quantity that is going to give you only the Euler equation. So for simplicity, let's do this first. And the other one follows the same thing. So what I need to do is I need to write the equations d mu, t mu, nu equal to 0. Okay? But this is d mu, t to the power d times eta mu nu plus d times u mu u nu equal to 0. So So here there are two terms. There is a d t to the power d minus 1 d mu t times this eta mu nu plus d u mu u nu. Plus t to the power d. So there is no derivative on the eta. So there is another d here. And then there is a d mu of u mu u nu. So one can simplify it a little bit. If I divide, I'm going to get d mu of ln of t times eta mu nu plus d u mu u nu plus d mu of u mu u nu equal to 0. Okay, so these are the equations. Now there are two interesting projections that you can do, and that's what people usually do, and that's also the way that it arises in gravity, these equations. And one projection is with respect to u mu, and the other one is with this respect to this p mu nu operator. So you will get five equations that are not independent, but they are very convenient. So what you do is you take these equations, and once I multiply it by u mu, and the other time I multiply it by p sigma nu. These are orthogonal, these are independent because this is an zero eigenvector of that one, zero eigenvalue eigenvector of that one. And so if I multiply by u nu, so that means I look at d mu t mu nu. So what happens here is that, so this guy is going to give me u mu d mu of ln t, but I'm going to get one from here, but also here, because I multiply by u nu, this gives me minus 1, so it's going to be something like 1 minus times 1 minus d. And then the other one is going to give me a minus d mu u mu. So if you arrange it, you get a d mu u mu plus d minus 1 u mu d mu ln t equal to 0. That's the first equation. This equation is actually just a conservation of entropy. There's nothing. So if you define an entropy current, which is S mu, is some S that I will not determine at the moment, is T to some power. Well, okay, let's forget about the overall coefficient. It's something like T to the D minus 1 U mu. This bidimensional analysis, this equation is nothing but D mu S mu is 0. So entropy is conserved at this order. And this is just the conservation of entropy. The second equation is I have to multiply that with respect to this P. So what I want to calculate is this P sigma nu d mu t mu nu is 0. So let's do that. So P, when it multiplies the U, it gives you 0. So therefore, the first term is going to give me just P sigma nu, d nu of ln t. That's the first expression. And the second one, again, when this multiplies the nu, it's going to get 0. So it's going to give us plus u mu d mu of p sigma nu mu nu equal to 0. But actually, that's not good. I have to arrange it a little bit. So let's do that. It was too quick. So I have to write it like this. I have to write it as u sigma u nu plus delta sigma nu times d mu of plus u mu, u mu and the u of u mu. I think that's probably right. And this one will give me a zero because it's a derivative of a u nu squared, so this will drop. This will give me a u mu d mu of u sigma. Okay, so final equation is going to be, got it right. Second equation is going to be p sigma mu d mu ln t plus a u mu d mu u sigma equal to zero. Okay, so this is one equation. These are four equations. They are not independent, but that's normally the way you're going to get them. These are basically the constraint. Einstein's equations will be these ones. This is, if you wish, in the is what?
Equations?
You know, because to sigma runs from OD. These are the equations. This is another one. So these okay. are.
But you know it's orthogonal to the.
Right. So these are not independent.
Okay.
Yeah, they are not independent, of course, yeah. But you see, it's if you think about Einstein's equations in D dimension, or D plus one dimensional, they will have D plus one constraints. And those are the constraints equations. This will be what is called the focusing equation in black hole physics, and these are Gauss-Godard's equations. So these are the equations, and let's do a quick calculation of the non-relativistic limit to see that indeed we get another Stokes equations out of that. So how do we see that? So what is a non-relativistic limit? A non-relativistic limit is very simple, right? What I have to do is I write gamma as 1 plus half v squared. And so u mu, I basically approximate it as 1 plus half v squared. And then here would be, the leading would be vi. And the scaling is done in the following way. Basically, you scale a derivative with respect to time as epsilon squared, which is like 1 over c squared. You scale a derivative with respect to space as epsilon, which is 1 over c. Epsilon is a small parameter to keep the counting. You scale vi as epsilon, like 1 over c. And then you scale the pressure as epsilon squared, which goes like 1 over c squared. And what you do is you write the temperature as some t note times 1 plus p squared. So this is the scaling. You can easily check that this is the right scaling that it is preserved by the Navier-Stokes equation. The relativistic scale, the non-relativistic scaling is very different, right? The time and the space don't scale in the same way. So you can have other scalings, and you can ask whether you will get some finite results or not. There are some scalings that do remove for you the non-linear terms, etc. But this is the particular scaling that you have to do in the non-relativistic limit to get a finite result for the equations. I mean, naively, it's not it's something that if I give you n equal to 4 theory and ask you to take a non-relativistic limit, it makes no sense. It's a conformal theory. Everything is the speed of light. It makes no sense. But when you look at the hydrodynamics, it does make sense for various reasons. But one reason is that if you look at flows, the flow components are composed of many, many vectors which can combine to have velocities which are smaller than the speed of light. So not everything moves in the speed of light. And therefore, it does make sense in hydrodynamics to do that. Now, if you look at these equations here, you can easily convince yourself
that the leading term here at order epsilon squared is just DIVI. All the other terms are of higher order. For instance, here there is a DT of U0. U0 is gamma, but that will give you V squared. That's order epsilon to the fourth. And here, already if you take T, you will get from the pressure order epsilon squared, and with this you get some derivative, so it's higher order.
This expansion? Why there is 1 plus P squared?
You have to define
some expansion of every quantity with the speed of light, okay? With respect to the speed of light, with respect to this parametrization. And this is what I choose in order to obtain in the limit the non-relativistic Navier-Stokes equations. And this basically tells you that pressure scales like velocity squared. Now, if you look at the Navier-Stokes equations, you see that this is right. Because in the Navier-Stokes equations...
You had
dtv, right? Plus vj dj vi equal minus dip or something. So this is epsilon squared, this is epsilon cubed, this is epsilon, epsilon, epsilon is a cube, epsilon and epsilon squared is cube. So this is the particular scaling that gives you the Navier-Stokes equation. Yeah.
Why is this 1 plus p squared?
I'm sorry. That was a mistake. It's c squared. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't see that. That was a mistake. It's just 1 plus p. It's not p squared. So you see that this equation there, equation 1, is just gives you the dIVI equal to 0. In the same way, if you will look at this equation, you can easily convince yourself that it will give you the right answer that you want. So, for instance, if I choose here 0, that will give me a dt. But then here I will choose the 1, the leading term. So I'll get something of order epsilon cubed. So from this I'm going to get a dtvi. But I can get also another term from which is of order epsilon cubed. That's, I pick a v from here, and space index from here. But that can give me also something which is vj, vj, vi. Okay. And this one is giving me, if I take just the space derivatives here, will give me the dip with the right sign. So this is the Euler equation. Now, if I will add the second term, which was this viscous piece, the eta mu nu sigma mu nu, okay, that will give me correctly what I want and will tell me how the viscosity of the non-relativistic theory is related to the viscosity of the relativistic one. So basically, now, if I will add the contribution from the minus 2 eta sigma mu nu and expand it, I will get, this is going to give me the piece which is ni dj dj i, where this one will be something of the form eta over s divided by this t naught. So basically, the ni is related to the eta over s and t naught. Now, what is t naught? T naught is basically the equilibrium black brain, or the equilibrium thermal field here. That's t naught determines it. So, depending on that temperature, you will arrange. So, let's say eta over s is of order 1, forget about it, 1 over 4 pi. Basically, what determines how low it is this t naught, the temperature. So, the high temperature will give you low viscosities, closer and closer to the Euler equation.
Okay, so now, what about turbulence in the relativistic case? In fact, as I told you, very, very little is known. In particular, it is not clear what are the universal statistics that you can have there, etc. So, there are small results, but let me quickly derive for you one scaling relation, which from which the Kolmogorov result will follow. So suppose I write this equation, but now I add the force term. Okay. So I'm putting some external force on the on that system, and I'm going to repeat what I quickly did the last time, but just for this equation, and you will see that the Kolmogorov follows from that. So for instance, suppose I pick as an example the knee equal to zero case, okay? So that will be a d0 of t 0, 0 plus a di of t zero I equal this f zero, which let's call it f. So this is this simple equation. And now what I want to do is let's multiply everything by t zero zero. So I multiply the whole equation by t zero zero, but let's do it at two separate points. So let me say that this is at a point r, and this is at r, and this is at r, and I multiply it by this at another point zero, just to have a separation in the correlation function. So when I multiply that, I'm going to get a d0 of t00 of r plus a di of t0i of r times t00, plus this times t00 at zero equal f of r and t00 at zero. Okay, I'm in a minute I'm going to average. And the averaging will be, you determine what's the averaging, or we can determine with respect to the force, a random force, or whatever. But I'm going to assume some things about the statistics of that averaging in order to determine what I want. But first thing, we said we want to consider a scaling regime. A scaling regime is where this R, we said, is smaller than this L and bigger than little l, where L is the scale that you excited the system, like the force scale. But since we are looking at scales which are much smaller than this L, this F of R, which is the force scale, is actually can be approximated by F of zero up to corrections of order R over L. Everything here has corrections, but they are negligible. So basically this is just F of zero, T zero of zero. With this approximation. And when I will average, I will give it a name, epsilon. That's actually the coefficient that was undetermined when we were saying there is a scaling scaling relations. We say these correlators are R to some power, but there is something in front of that. That something does depend on the force, does depend on the properties of the system. It's not universal. In this case, you see exactly what it is. It's basically the averaging of the force that you put. Now, what do you do with these ones? So with these ones, you have to use the following trick. You say, I'm reaching a steady state. If I reach a steady state, then I can do the following. So first of all, I write d0 of t00 at r, t00 at 0, as d0 of t00 of r, t00 of 0, minus t00 of r, d0 of t00. Okay, so that's a simple, right? And this term, when I will average, I neglect because I'm in steady state. But that's a steady state assumption. So therefore, this will go away. So now here I assume, so I was assuming already two things. One is that the force scale can be approximated because it's the length r is much smaller than l, and the second is the steady state condition. These are, by the way, the same assumptions in Kolmogorov approach. And then I remain with this one. But what do I do with this one? I take this and I replace it just by the ordinary equation. Okay, so this one I replace by the original equation, which is minus, so this will be minus di of t0i at zero, plus f at zero. I replace it by the original equation. But you see that actually what do I have here? So let's remove this minus, okay? This multiplying this is exactly the term that I see here, while I need to assume translation invariance and isotropy, etc. And this other term that I see, this multiplies this, is exactly, this multiplies this, is exactly the same term that I have here. So what you have at the end is just the equation, and now I put the averages, so it will be a di of t00 at r, t0i at zero, equal epsilon. And now you integrate these equations assuming isotropy. This goes away. You get Ri. Now this equation, if you covariantize it properly, is the right result. But let's see how it gives you the Navier-Stokes, how it gives you the ordinary Kolmogorov relation. The ordinary Kolmogorov relation is the non-relativistic case, and then is what? No, there were two from both of them, right? Because this was contributing a similar term, and this was a similar term. So you have two and two, so they draw. So this is actually a scaling relation that, in principle, you can try to check in relativistic hydrodynamics. And we did actually try to check it on numerical codes of Rieck, but the ones that we have were not good enough because they showed that we could prove it, but I think it's just because of initial conditions. So it was not, it was never proven, actually. But if you take this V is smaller than C, T00, the leading term will be like V squared. T0i will be like Vi. And the equation you're going to get there is V squared at zero, Vi at zero scales like epsilon times Ri. This is the three-point function version of Kolmogorov result. Now you can tell me, okay, so what's the big deal? Let's multiply this by, you know, whatever, this to some powers n, and get all the correlation functions, and then we are happy. Actually, this doesn't work. So that's why the three-point function is singled out also in the Kolmogorov. There's only one relation you can get in this cheap way, because when you put that and you try to, after that, use this type of argument, it will not work. You will always remain with some stuff. So therefore, the three-point function is singled out. You can show that it's, you can get it. And therefore, I believe this is the reason why in Kolmogorov derivation, which gives you actually all of them, there's one particular that works with experiment, and this is that one. And all the others you cannot derive because they're incorrect. I think I'm already a little bit over time, so maybe I'll stop here. Okay.
Thank you.
With
the n bigger than 1.
Yes. What goes wrong?
No, and next you put an input with the result should this like R to some coefficient instead of n. Can you relate it to a scaling of another algorithm?
You mean like can we derive some kind of ordered identity? It's actually very problematic. The problem is you always remain with some... Okay, first of all, I don't know. I tried to play a little bit with it. I couldn't get anything which was helping. But and I think that this is also too cheap. You will not get interesting ordered identities out of it. Basically, that's what you want. Relate certain correlation functions to each other. One can try to play a little bit more with that, but I have suspicion that we exhausted this to the maximum. We need another idea. By the way, this did allow us to derive also in the incompressible case new correlation functions with pressure, which can be measured experimentally. So I hope they will be measured. And also in incompressible non-relativistic, where people never thought that there is any scaling relation. So it's kind of cute that this chip think and gives you certain experimental things that you can check on also numerical codes. But I think we exhausted it. You need another idea.
Okay, thank you.